When the Roses Bloom Again by Lee McCusker, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of J.K. Rowling.
Chapter 104. Familiar Faces. Arcturus straightened the collar of his robes before checking his reflection in the mirror. He hated wearing formal robes away from the Wizengamot, but with Walburga's bright idea of hosting a family dinner, he needed to dress the part.
"What the hell does the woman want, anyway?"
he grumbled as Melania entered the room, as immaculately dressed and beautiful as the day he'd married her.
"I don't know," Lady Black sighed. "Maybe she's pregnant."
Arcturus snorted derisively.
"You can't impregnate a frozen over Arcturus!"
Melania cut him off sharply. "You've been spending time in the basement with Charles again, haven't you? Your language is always atrocious when you've been around them." Arcturus smirked to himself.
"Is that not the reason I curse so much?" he denied. "It's the damned half-wits I have to deal with, like Walburga."
Melania rolled her eyes, but threaded her arm through his nonetheless.
"Well, you tried to be on your best behavior,"
Arcturus hummed.
"It'd go hard with her," he grumbled irritably. "She's all but got Orion's balls in her purse. Merlin knows what she's got that has made him such a spineless shit."
"Arcturus,"
Melania warned.
"Fine, I'll try my best," he placated.
Melania offered him a smile, and the two of them passed through the fireplace, one after the other, arriving in the study of Grimald Place where they were greeted by Creature. Arcturus despised the elf. It was too loyal to Walburga for his liking.
"Lord Black,"
the elf greeted him with a bow so low that his nose almost touched the floor.
"Hell, Creature,"
Melania replied politely as Arcturus flared his nostrils.
"Are you here to escort us to the kitchen?"
The elf nodded.
"Creature will be taking you now, mistress."
Arcturus followed with Melania's arm once more looped within his own, and he took in the sight of most of his family as they were shown in. Walburga, Orion, and Regulus were here, as were Cygnus and Druella. The other children were at school, and Cassie was still not with them. The less he thought about his older sister, the less frequent he suffered headaches.
"Lord Black!"
Walburga greeted him a little too enthusiastically for his liking, but Arcturus adhered to protocol when invited into another home and gently kissed the back of his daughter-in-law's cold knuckles. Melania followed suit, and the two women exchanged a kiss on each cheek.
"Father,"
Orion broke in cordially, taking Arcturus' hand and shaking it. The gesture was weak, his grip loose, and wrist limp, much like he had become over the years since he'd married Walburga.
"Orion,"
Arcturus replied with a nod, taking his seat at the head of the table.
"The first course will be served shortly,"
Walburga announced as she placed a napkin on her lap.
"I know you do not like being made to wait long,"
she added to Arcturus, who frowned questioningly at the woman. She was up to something, which meant that Arcturus's already poor mood was unlikely to improve by the end of the meal. He listened to the passing small talk as each dug into their meal, watching the demeanor of his youngest grandson. Regulus had always been quiet, but without Sirius here, he seemed to have gone in his shell even more. Walburga had been beside herself when she'd learned of her eldest son being placed in the House of Lions. She'd even had the audacity to write to Dumbledore to demand he be placed in Slytherin, ignoring the sorting entirely. Arcturus had been most displeased by her actions and attitude. Two of the best men he ever knew had been Gryffindors, and he had no doubt Sirius would be fine. He had the makings to be a fine lord, bluntness, charisma, and, by all accounts, was already showing promise of being a gifted wizard. He was so unlike Orion, who never really stood out for much. He was talented enough with the family magic and more than competent with potions, but that was all. Perhaps Arcturus should consider bypassing Orion as his heir and giving the title to Sirius when he'd passed on. The thought of Walburga's fury brought a smile to his lips.
"Finally a smile,"
Melania teased. "What has tickled you, Arcturus?"
"I'm simply enjoying a meal with my family,"
Arcturus lied, raising a toast with his wine glass. Melania didn't believe him for a moment, for no other seemed to detect the slightest hint of sarcasm in his tone.
"Family is what is important," Walburga declared. "It is nice for us to all be together. Cygnus, how are the negotiations between yourself and Lord Lestrange going? Are you close to signing a contract for Bella and Rodolphus to marry?"
Arcturus's gaze snapped towards his youngest son, who shook his head.
"Bella will not be marrying him," he replied with a shrug. "I must say it is for the best."
Arcturus couldn't agree more, but Walburga evidently begged to differ.
Why ever not? She gasped in disbelief. It was I that suggested the match to him.
Then you shouldn't have,
Arcturus interjected firmly.
It is not your place.
It is an excellent match,
Walburga defended.
No, it isn't,
Cygnus disagreed before Arcturus could speak.
Bella would be miserable.
The girl should do as she's told,
Walburga said haughtily. Cygnus chuckled.
Bella would not marry him even if I wanted her to. She has no interest in Lestrange, and Harry shot the idea down immediately. He was very quick to remind me of my promise to him. Bella will not be forced to marry anyone.
Evans, what does he have to do with it?
He's Bella's godfather, Drella pointed out. He only agreed to be so as long as he was given final approval on who Bella marries. He'll never agree to anyone Bella does not choose for herself. Cygnus nodded as he smiled.
He will have her married off to one of his mudblood sprogs,
Walburga seethed. Arcturus could not believe what he had just heard, and neither could any other seated at the table. They fell silent immediately, both Cygnus and Druella offended by the comment and Arcturus steaming in rage.
You will not use that slur against him or any member of his family, he snapped. Never again, do you understand?
Walburga frowned, but nodded grumpily.
Fine.
Arcturus eyed the woman for a moment before looking away. The sight of Walburga made him sick, and for her to insult Harry in such a way infuriated the Lord Black beyond measure. Melania rubbed his arm comfortingly, and he deflated slightly. Walburga had best hold her tongue, or she would get a reaction she would wish she had never provoked. Once more they fell silent whilst the main course was served, though Walburga seemed to remain in good spirits despite being chastised quite harshly. She wanted something. Arcturus knew the woman well enough to know how petty and petulant she was, and if there was no reason to force it, her veil of politeness would no longer be in place.
Have you heard from Sirius?
Arcturus asked Orion, amused by the scowl that marred Walburga's features at the mention of the boy.
I received a letter from him yesterday,
Orion explained with a fond smile.
He is doing well and enjoying his time at Hogwarts.
Walburga muttered something incoherently under her breath.
If you have something to say, then say it.
Arcturus sighed irritably.
The boy is a disgrace.
Walburga growled.
A Gryffindor of all things. He has always been defiant, churlish, and lacking what it takes to be a Black.
Is that so?
Arcturus questioned interestedly as he leaned back in his chair.
Well, I believe he will make a fine lord when his time comes. The boy has an unwavering character and spirit that will serve him well.
Cygnus and Orion both nodded their agreement whilst Walburga began to seethe. Melania pinched her husband, realizing he was simply trying to get a rise out of the woman. One of the few joys Arcturus had when coming here was irritating her, but although she was becoming flustered, her false smile remains in place.
What is the occasion?
Arcturus huffed, having grown tired of the false pleasantry.
Why did you ask us here?
Walburga seemed to be offended by the question, but neither Arcturus nor any other were falling for it, something she became aware of quickly. Her expression shifted to one more familiar to the Lord Black, one of deviousness.
I wished to discuss the family position in supporting Lord Voldemort,
she declared as Creature served a sponge pudding for dessert.
I have it on good authority that the other prominent families are allying themselves with him.
We will be doing no such thing, Arcturus said firmly. I will say this once, and once only. If I get even a whiff of defiance or treachery from any of you, I will personally ensure that the rest of your days are spent as miserable as I can possibly make them.
None spoke for a moment as Arcturus glared at each of them in turn.
So we have to do nothing? And allow the filth of society to usurp our positions?
Walburga asked in disbelief.
Usurp?
Arcturus chuckled humorously.
Who has tried to usurp us in any way?
The mudbloods!
Walburga hissed.
Can you not see it? They are becoming more influential. Soon they will demand equal representation on the Wizarding Gambit.
Blood of bollocks, Arcturus snorted. Our traditions are very much alive. And this riddle is merely playing on the insecurity of idiots like you and the rest that are buying into his crap. Are you such a moron that you can't see that?
Is that what Evans told you? He's only a half-blood.
Crucio!
Arcturus's wand snapped upwards before any could intervene, and Walburga fell from her seat, writhing in agony under the effects of the curse. Arcturus let up after only a few seconds, but it was enough for the woman to get the message.
I told you that you will not disparage Harry anymore, he growled warningly, in case you've forgotten Riddle is a half-blood too. The difference is that Harry has fought for this country, and were it not for him, you may be sitting here under Grindelwald's regime. You will curb your tongue, Walburga. And there will be no more mention of supporting Riddle.
Walberga trembled as she took her seat once more, her skin pale and clammy as she looked towards Arcturus.
I have been very patient with you over the years, and watched whilst you have turned my heir into a simpering fool who caters to your whim.
Arcturus, Melania said warningly.
No, it needs to be said, Arcturus replied. You have no say and no power in this family, Walberga, and that will never change. Regardless of whether Orion ever succeeds me or not, I would ensure that you will have no say in anything related to family matters.
Walberga merely glared, and Arcturus returned it. Perhaps he truly would need to consider naming Sirius as his heir. Orion didn't even have enough of a spine to speak up for himself or against his wife.
I've had enough of this for one evening,
he declared irritably as he stood, followed by Melania, who was looking at him worriedly.
Do not forget my warning, Arcturus reiterated. I will be less kind than you can imagine should I need to be.
With that, he swept from the room, regretting the lenience he had shown towards Orion when he'd asked to marry Walberga. For Arcturus, it had been the easy decision at the time. It meant that he had avoided negotiations with the other lords, but his daughter-in-law had been nothing but a hindrance since she had arrived.
It's okay, Arcturus, Melania comforted when they arrived in their own home. I think she got the message.
She had better, Arcturus sighed tiredly. I will not tolerate her stupidity.
Especially since you're planning to fight against him, Melania replied sadly. I'm no fool, Arcturus. I know you better than anyone. Harry will fight him, and you'll follow. You're loyal to him, and can I blame you for that?
He earned my loyalty, Arcturus replied gruffly.
Melania nodded, offering him a smile.
You're a good man, she chuckled. Despite wanting everyone to think you're unbearably mean.
I am,
Arcturus said defiantly. Melania placed a kiss on his cheek.
You keep telling yourself that?
With that, she was gone. And Arcturus frowned to himself. Melania truly knew him too well. A thought that brought a smirk to his lips. And there was no keeping anything from the woman. Not that he wished to. Harry had indeed earned his loyalty. Something the man had in common with his wife. Even if it was slightly infuriating that she could read him like an open book. He was supposed to be the Lord Black, a figure of mystery and unpredictability, but evidently not to Melania.
Damned woman,
Arcturus grumbled amusedly. Breakfast in the Great Hall was never the most interesting affair. Most of the students were still half asleep as they prepared themselves for the day ahead. Even the usually rambunctious first-year boys were more subdued, something Lily was grateful for.
Charms first.
Sirius yawned as he took a seat on the opposite side of the table with a tousled James and Peter.
Where's Remus?
Merlin questioned.
Hospital wing, James murmured. He said his stomach is playing up and wanted to get a tonic. He's been feeling off for the past few days.
He hasn't looked well,
Lily commented as she helped herself to some toast.
That's just Remus, Sirius replied with a shrug. He's always been sickly, apparently. What's Dumbledore doing?
He asked, a curious frown creasing his brow. The headmaster had stood to address the students, something he rarely did unless he needed to announce something.
I will not take up much of your time, he assured the students, but I am pleased to inform you that we will be joined by a special guest for the remainder of the year, who, in light of the cancellation of the Quidditch season, has agreed to assist with both the flying lessons for the first years and assisting Professor Evans in his duties. Please join me in welcoming Rosa Evans, the current seeker for the Holyhead Harpies.
Evans?
Lily questioned as a red-headed woman entered with their defense professor. Her mouth fell agape as she took in the appearance of the new arrival.
Harry's daughter,
Sirius explained.
Bloody hell, you look like her,
he observed. James nodded as he looked between the two confusedly. Lily, too, had noticed the uncanny resemblance she shared with the woman. They had the same shade of red hair, and even their complexion was eerily similar. It was like taking a glimpse of the future of what she would look like in a couple of decades.
His daughter,
she whispered, her eyes widening as her gaze was met by the woman's. They simply stared for several seconds, seemingly sharing the same shock as they looked upon one another.
Yeah, James answered, breaking into Lily's thoughts. Not to think she came from the two professors, isn't it? He chuckled.
Lily nodded and swallowed deeply. She couldn't deny that she looked just like the woman, who didn't seem to look much like either of her parents had she been adopted. The thought only elicited a less pleasant one concerning herself had Lily been adopted. She looked nothing like Petunia, and only resembled her own mother slightly, but none in her family had red hair nor the unusual green eyes. Most of her family were brunettes with either blue or brown eyes. Lily shook her head of her maudlin thoughts. Now there must be an explanation. though the shared name and the undeniable similarities in their appearances only raised more questions.
"Come on, we'll be late if we don't leave now,"
Moen declared, nudging Lily with her elbow. The redhead stood, her eyes shifting to the staff table a final time where Rosa Evans was seated, the woman's gaze shifting to her before she looked confusedly towards her parents, who had seemingly noticed the exchange. Something wasn't quite right, and though Lily couldn't comprehend what was happening, she couldn't dismiss the thoughts she'd had. Either something was indeed amiss, or she was being paranoid for no reason, though she couldn't help but think the latter was more likely. It was odd. Being back at Hogwarts, Rosa had not followed in the footsteps of her parents and returned to the castle in any capacity since she had graduated, but the castle never seemingly changed. The classrooms were as she remembered, and even many members of staff remained, but it was strange being here on the other side of things. She remembered her time here fondly, having breakfast with her friends in the Great Hall, visiting Hogsmeade on the weekends they were permitted to, and spending her evenings either in the common room or on the Quidditch pitch. "That'll be all for today," her father announced, dismissing the fourth-year class of Slytherin and Gryffindor students. "Tomorrow we will begin working on spell identification during combat situations. Knowing what is coming at you is key in knowing what defense to use." The students left, and her father busied himself preparing for his next class by removing jars of spiders from a bag and placing them on each of the desks. Smirking to himself, he conjured covers for them. "He'll frighten most of them," Rosa sighed. Her father nodded. "Fear is something you must be accustomed to when dealing with all enemies," he pointed out. "You must be able to act with clarity, even at your most distressed." "Were you ever scared during a fight?" Her father frowned at the question. "Not of dying," he murmured, "but of losing those I cared for." Before Rosa could press him further, they were interrupted by the arrival of a class of hyperactive first years, hailing from the same houses of the previous one. "All right, take your seats," her father instructed firmly. The students fell silent immediately and did so, even James Potter, who was almost impossible to shut up. It was then that Rosa spotted the curious red-headed girl seated in front of him and was once more taken aback by her appearance. She had noticed her during breakfast, and evidently the girl had also noticed their similar appearance. It was eerie how much the girl resembled Rosa, even in the mannerism of tucking her hair behind her ear the same way when it fell out of place. "Today we will be learning how to tackle a particularly nasty creature. I must urge you not to attempt to remove them from the jars. A bite from one of these is most unpleasant and can result in death if not treated in a timely manner," her father warned, removing the covers with a dramatic wave of his wand. Many of the students screamed and jumped out of their seats at the sight of the spiders, and Rosa rolled her eyes at the spark of amusement she saw in her father's eyes. "These are newly hatched acromantula," he explained.
"Newly hatched?"
a boy questioned, paling further as he eyed the arachnid in front of him.
"How big do they get?"
Her father nodded. "I have seen one that would have no issue in eating a grown man in one sitting," he replied thoughtfully, an edge of fondness to his tone. "Do not worry, Mr. Pettigrew. One of these here could barely finish a finger." The boy whimpered in response. "Now there is a simple spell to deal with these creatures. So long as you're only facing one, acromantula do tend to live in large colonies numbering in the hundreds."
"Hundreds?"
the red-headed girl asked. Her father nodded. "We have quite a large colony of them in the forest," he explained. "If that doesn't keep you out of there, then nothing will. However, the spell we will learn today can be used to fend one or two off. The incantation is Arania Exumi. There is no specific wand movement, and if cast correctly, it will blast the spider away from you. What if you end up facing hundreds of them?" Sirius Black questioned. "Then I would hope you have your affairs in order," her father replied. "I would not recommend finding yourself in such an unfavorable position, but if you did, then you could always conjure a giant bath. Spiders are notoriously bad at getting out of them." Rosa snorted to herself. Sirius was deluded if he thought her father was going to help him with whatever scheme he and his friends were cooking up that involved the Forbidden Forest. "You know what to do," her father called. "Miss Evans and I will be coming round to assist you, not you, Lily, the other Miss Evans," he corrected when the young redhead looked at him confusedly. Rosa's eyes snapped towards the girl once more. Evans. Their similar appearance could be put down to mere coincidence, but a shared surname, too. She looked between the girl and her father whilst the students got to work. Had he had an affair a little more than a decade ago? Rosa shook her head at the thought immediately. Her father was devoted to her mother and would never have done such a thing, nor would he be foolish enough to give the girl his name. Still, it was odd, and Rosa's curiosity had been piqued. For better or for worse, she approached where the girl was seated with her friend. She clearly needed no help with her casting, but Rosa wished to speak with her nevertheless. Lily froze as she did so, staring at her with a mixture of fear and the same curiosity Rosa felt.
"You must be Lily," Rosa greeted her warmly.
The girl nodded dumbly until her friend elbowed her in the side.
"Hello?"
Lily replied.
"That's bloody creepy,"
James Potter commented, looking at the two. Rosa ignored the boy and crouched down so she was at eye level with the girl. It was like looking at herself, and had she not been certain she'd never had a child, she would be convinced Lily Evans was either her daughter or herself born again.
"How are you finding your time at Hogwarts?"
she asked.
"It's different from what I was expecting,"
Lily replied. "Severus said it would be, but I thought magic would be pulling rabbits out of hats and things like that."
"Pulling rabbits out of hats?" Rosa chuckled.
Lily blushed, and Rosa noticed the pale, dark-haired boy in the Slytherin robes gawping at the two of them from across the room.
"You're a Muggleborn," she realized.
Lily nodded. "I didn't know about magic until Severus told me I was a witch. I just thought I was different."
"You're different from Muggles," Rosa pointed out.
"Do you not have any other witches or wizards in your family?" Lily shook her head.
"I'm the only one. Not even Petunia, my sister, can do magic."
Lily and Petunia, named for flowers, just as Rosa and her own sisters were.
"Well, it was very nice to meet you," Rosa offered sincerely. "If you ever have any questions, then feel free to find me, and whether it be here or on the Quidditch pitch."
"Are you good at flying?" James and Sirius both laughed at the question.
"She plays for England," the latter explained. "She's one of the best."
"Thank you, Sirius,"
Rosa replied. "Do you like flying?"
"I'm not very good," Lily answered irritably.
"Well, with me teaching you, you'll be more than competent," Rosa promised.
"Some of us had the advantage of learning before we could even walk,"
she added pointedly towards James and Sirius, who were seemingly going to comment. With a nod, Rosa moved on to the Slytherin students, though her thoughts remained on her doppelganger for the rest of the lesson. When the students were eventually dismissed, she approached her father, who had undoubtedly noticed the attention she had paid to Lily. Flicking her wand towards the door to ensure their privacy, she looked questioningly at the man.
"Is there anything you wish to tell me about her?" Rosa asked bluntly. "Is she your daughter?"
Her father deflated as he shook his head firmly. "Lily is not my daughter," he assured her.
"So everything I've noticed about her is a coincidence."
Her father released a deep breath, an uncharacteristic look of longing and even sadness marring his features.
"This was why I was a little reluctant for you to be here," he sighed.
"Because of Lily?"
Her father nodded.
"Join me and your mother for dinner tonight, and I will tell you what you need to know," he promised.
Rosa immediately felt a sense of dread settling in, but the unmistakable sadness surrounding her father prevented her from pressing the issue. Instead, she pulled the man into a hug, confident that although she was unlikely to be pleased with what she heard, that he would not keep the truth from her, whatever the evidently heartbreaking truth was.
"Come on, Lyles, we'll be late for potions," Marwade urged.
"I'll catch up,"
Lily replied dismissively, her gaze fixated on the closed door of the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom. There was more to Rosa Evans than merely a shared name and appearance, and Lily could not ignore it, could not get on with her day until she had confronted the woman. She waited for several minutes for the door to open, and when it did, the woman in question exited. Startling at the sight of the girl, Rosa Evans clutched her chest.
"Well, you scared the life of me,"
she gasped.
"Shouldn't you be in your next lesson?"
Lily nodded, again finding herself lost for words in the woman's company.
"Are you my mother?"
she blurted, chastising herself for her outburst. Rosa shook her head. The gaze shifted briefly to the door awkwardly.
"No, I've never had a child," she answered.
Lily believed her and was somewhat disappointed by the denial.
"Why do you ask?"
Rosa responded. Lily shrugged as she looked at the ground.
"Because I'm not anything like the rest of my family, and we look alike," she murmured. "I don't look like any of them."
"I don't look like any of mine," Rosa replied. "You've seen my parents. None of them have red hair, but I got my father's eyes. When my brother and sisters were born, I felt like I didn't belong with them. They all have dark hair. I thought my parents had adopted me."
"Did they?"
"No,"
Rosa chuckled. "They are my parents, as I'm sure yours are. We just look different to the rest of our family." Lily nodded her understanding, though she only felt a little better after speaking to the woman.
"Come on. Would you like me to walk you to your next lesson?" Rosa asked, offering her hand.
"I'll explain that you were helping me with something."
"Thank you," Lily said appreciatively as she accepted the woman's hand.
"I really did thank you with my mother,"
she added, feeling quite foolish.
Well, if we were to step out in public together, I'm sure most people would assume that too, Rosa replied.
Is it so bad that you look like me?
Lily shook her head.
You're beautiful,
Lily commented.
And so are you,
Rosa replied, eliciting a smile from the girl.
Bloody hell, what do I tell her?
Harry huffed from behind his desk. Rosa had left when classes had finished for the day, and Harry tried to lose himself in some marking, but to no avail. Minerva offered him a sympathetic look.
I should have thought of this before suggesting she come here, she said apologetically.
Harry offered her a tired smile. You're only trying to help, he soothed. I suppose the only thing for it is to tell her the truth and hope she understands.
That's if she believes you, Minerva replied.
True, Harry snorted. Something was bound to come out eventually, wasn't it?
Minerva nodded.
I did think you would have told Charles by now.
I wanted to, Harry admitted, but the more time that passed, the harder it became.
Well, I don't think you can avoid it with Rosa. She's not stupid and knows something isn't right.
Harry released a deep breath as he dragged a hand through his hair.
Not to tell her, he decided. I'd rather she know the truth than think I'm Lily's father.
Minerva rubbed his shoulder comfortingly.
We'll tear all together, she declared.
Harry nodded and began packing his things away, preparing himself to speak the secret he had kept for almost 4 decades now. What if she didn't understand? What if she felt like he was nothing but a liar? He shook his head of those thoughts as he threw a handful of flue powder into the fireplace and stepped through into his own home. Rosa was sitting in the living room, evidently waiting for him to return, and stood immediately, looking at him in expectation. Her expression didn't shift even when Minerva arrived, and much to Harry's relief, the woman took charge of the situation.
Sit down, Rosa, she instructed gently.
Their daughter frowned as she did so. An awkward silence fell for a few moments before Rosa broke it.
She thinks that she's my daughter, and that I gave her up for adoption, she said sadly. Who is this girl?
Harry looked towards Minerva, and his wife took his hand before squeezing it encouragingly.
Lily Evans is my mother.
His words were met with silence, and Harry feared the reaction he would be met with, but as it stretched on, he forced himself to look at his daughter, whose expression was one of confusion and disbelief.
Your mother?
She choked, when she realized that Harry was not jesting. Harry nodded as he swallowed deeply.
When I was 15, I somehow managed to travel back in time by 60 years when I did something very stupid and desperate. One moment it was 1955. My godfather had just been murdered and I was broken. The next, it was 1935, where almost everyone I had ever known hadn't even been born.
Shit.
Rosa cursed, not having expected this explanation.
Is this true?
She asked Minerva. The woman nodded. It is, she confirmed quietly.
The only people who know are me and Albus now. Nicholas and Perenelle knew, as did Armando Dippet. That's why she looks like me, Rosa murmured. I took after my grandmother.
You look just like her, Harry commented.
Rosa merely nodded as she fell silent, taking in what she had learned.
You arrived at Hogwarts at the beginning of your 6th year, she mused aloud. Rosalina told me she didn't know anything about your life before then, other than that your parents were.
She looked up at Harry wide-eyed in realization. Murdered, he finished for her. Voldemort killed them. My mother died pleading for my life, but he killed her anyway before he tried to do the same to me. Rosa searched his features, a tear trickling down her cheek as she stood.
You've never told anyone this?
Harry shook his head. I lost everything when I was brought here at first, but gained everything after. My life was nothing but one miserable experience after the other. And the only things I miss about it are my friends.
Oh, Dad, that must have been awful for you.
It was, Harry agreed. But your mother got me through it. I couldn't use my father's name because it would have drawn too much attention to me, so I chose my mother's. Not really thinking it through, and honestly expecting to be killed before it mattered.
You really thought that?
Minerva asked emotionally. I did. With how my life was and what I knew was coming, I didn't expect to live this long. When I realized Albus would do nothing against Grindelwald, I expected I would die during the war. And with everything else, I didn't consider I'd have much of a life, but then you came along, he added. His gaze shifting to Rosa.
Me?
The woman asked disbelievingly. Harry laughed as he nodded. Your mother and I were pretty dense when we were younger.
You mean you were dense? Minerva interjected. Fine. I was dense, and I didn't realize that I had something worth fighting for all along, Harry explained as he took Minerva's hand. But it was when I learned that I would be a father that everything fell into place, and I knew I had to live for you. I would not have any child of mine being raised without a father, and I wouldn't leave your mother.
So you did whatever was necessary to make sure you won? Harry nodded.
I did. And I'd do it again for all of you, he declared. Even before the war was over, I somehow gained the fame, and it was too late to change who I was.
Rosa nodded her understanding and began pondering what she had been told. If Lily Evans was your mother, then who was your father?
James Potter.
Rosa appeared to be shocked by the revelation. A name that was too recognizable to use.
Harry James Potter.
That was the name my parents gave me. Rosa looked up at him once more before wrapping her arms gently around him.
I won't even pretend to understand everything you've been through until you cope with it, but I'm proud of you, Dad. It will take some getting used to, but being your daughter has never been the easiest thing.
I'm aware of that, Harry chuckled. And Rosa placed a kiss on his cheek.
I'm sorry, Dad, for everything you went through and for doubting you. I shouldn't have done that. Not when you've never given me a reason to.
Harry shook his head as he chuckled. You have nothing to apologize for, he assured her. Merely pleased that the conversation had not gone as badly as it could have, though as he felt the galleon in his pocket become suddenly warm, he knew the rest of the night would not pass so smoothly.
What is it?
Minerva asked worriedly as he removed the coin.
Bristol,
Harry read aloud as he drew his wand.
Dad?
Rosa asked worriedly. I'll be back. Harry assured them as he activated the additional security measures he'd placed around the house.
Get the others on the flue and bring them home,
he instructed before disappearing in a column of fire. It was nice to be away from Diagon Alley when on shift. It meant that the Aurors were able to divest themselves of the red robes they wore on a daily basis in favor of civilian, usually muggle clothing. Also, their time out of the wizarding world was usually quiet, and they were only called to return if their assistance was required. It made a welcome break, particularly with the current mood of Britain.
This is boring,
Danes, the Auror Jack had been paired with for the past month or so, complained.
Boring is good, Jack pointed out. It means we aren't in danger.
Danes scowled as he kicked at a stone.
It's too quiet for my liking, he grumbled.
Jack shook his head irritably.
Why did they have to say it?
Say what?
The Q-word.
Whenever anyone uses it, something always happens, I'm telling you, Danes. If something does happen, it's on you.
I hope it does, the man replied belligerently. It beats walking around a shithole like Bradford.
Jack snorted. He didn't like Danes, but he wasn't wrong in his observation of the city they found themselves in. The streets were lined with filth, almost as though the people lacked pride in their home. Maybe it was just a muggle thing.
Great, now you've done it.
Jack sighed as he felt his aura card begin to vibrate in his pocket.
Come on, Bristol,
he informed his partner before vanishing quietly. Immediately his nose filled with the smell of burning and screams could be heard in the distance.
Daniel, what's happening?
He murmured, flicking the elder wand into his hand and running towards the disturbance. Danes caught him up a moment later, but Jack was too focused on squinting through the smoke where he could see several figures running.
This is more like it,
Danes declared as he rushed into the fray before Jack could stop him. There was no telling how many foes they faced, nor how many other Aurors had arrived.
Fucking idiot,
Jack cursed as he followed, keeping his wits about him. The screams continued, but it was the sound of laughter that caught his attention, and as he rounded the next corner, he found the source. The first thing he noticed was the unmoving, broken form of his partner, sprawled across the pavement, and four cloaked figures looming over him, their bone-white masks visible even in the darkness.
Well, looks like we have another one,
one of the Death Eaters said gleefully. Jack struck immediately, remembering the training his father had instilled within him.
Strike hard and strike fast. Kill and ask questions later.
His blasting curse blew a large crater in the ground between himself and the approaching men, launching concrete and dirt in their direction. Not waiting for a rebuttal, Jack hissed loudly, and a bolt of blue light careened from his wand. A blood-curdling screech followed, meaning that his spell had found a target. However, two others came his way and he was forced to shield, but Jack knew better than to rest behind it. With a wave of his wand, he dispelled it, and sent a trio of knives into the smoke. His effort was met with nothing but the sound of crackling flames as the fires continued to burn around him, but even the screams had stopped. Coughing, he cleared the smoke with his wand and his jaw tightened at the sight that greeted him. Only a few feet away was the body of the man he had killed, and a little further back was Danes. But it wasn't the corpses that caught his attention. Jack was surrounded by people in black robes, each adorned with a white mask. Their wands were pointed at him, and Jack could only chuckle at his own foolishness. Never go into a situation blind. If you can't see your surroundings, wait until you can. That had been another of the lessons his father had drilled into him, and though Jack wanted to kick himself, he needed to focus. He was under no illusion that he could defeat the 3 or 4 dozen people he faced, but he was his father's son through and through. He would fight until the life was ripped from him.
"Come on then, you bastards!"
he roared, his eyes widening as a plethora of spells were sent his way. Jack threw himself to the ground to avoid the impact, only to be blinded by a sudden roar of golden flames surrounding him. When he opened his eyes, he could only look on in disbelief at the arrival of other cloaked figures, these ones garbed in white robes and wearing black masks. There were hundreds of them, spilling from every alleyway and avenue to attack the Death Eaters, who immediately began to flee. Jack stood rooted to the spot as those in black robes were routed in a violent scuffle, though most managed to escape the sudden, unexpected assault. Still, those that had saved him had managed to capture 6 of them. And that was when Jack caught a glimpse of the symbol that adorned the mask.
"The serpent," he whispered.
That was his father's mark, and the one he had used against Grindelwald. Had the man created his own army? Jack couldn't be certain, but he had no doubt that his father was here, and it had been him that had saved him.
"Dad!"
he called. None of the cloaked figures responded as they set to work repairing the damage done by the Death Eaters, but Jack could feel his father's magic in the air, something that was only punctuated when the dark mark that had been hanging above them was destroyed, and the mark of the serpent replaced it. Those dressed in white cheered enthusiastically, and Jack found himself joining in. The Aurors had been all but castrated in the fight against Voldemort, but there was nothing preventing an anonymous group of wizards from taking action.
"Have you got your lessons?"
a voice spoke behind him. Jack turns to find himself face to face with one of the figures, the bright green eyes beneath the mask leaving him in no doubt as to who it was.
"I'm sorry, Dad," Jack replied sincerely.
"Don't be sorry, son," his father sighed. "Do better next time. I did not want that to be you." He was pointing at what remained of Danes, and Jack nodded.
"I will be," he promised.
"Good," his father replied as he pulled him into a hug.
"I don't know what I would do if I lost you."
"I'm a grown man, Dad," Jack chuckled. "I can handle myself."
"I know," his father murmured, "but that doesn't mean I won't always protect you when I can. You're still my boy, and that will never change."
The words filled him with warmth, and as ever, Jack felt lucky to have a father like Harry Evans. It hadn't always been this easy, but he wouldn't have it any other way.
For this and other stories by the same author, visit leemccusker.com, as well as the fanfiction.net page of The Black's Resurgence. Music by Dr. James Benikoff and Sam Gabriel. If you would like to commission me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Patreon page, to which I hope you consider subscribing to support me, and my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.